This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket Can.
And Real Ketones Keto Energy Shots.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, glad you can be with us as we continue along this morning on Wake Up Call. We got Gabe Lax, USA Today, will join us. We'll go over the Major League Baseball postseason. And we'll continue our thoughts on Week 3 of the National Football League. College football, of course, this weekend. The SEC got started. Florida looked really good. Now, Alabama won against an inferior Missouri team. So did Georgia in beating Arkansas. By the way, the Razorbacks have the toughest schedule ever. I've never seen a tougher schedule in my life than when I looked at Arkansas' schedule over the weekend. But Mike Leach and Mississippi State pulled off a huge upset, beating LSU. Now, LSU, again, no Joe Burrow, no Clyde Edwards-Helaire. A couple of other players had opted out. But still, that's still a Mississippi State football team that needed a brand new head coach, right? They needed a new coach. They needed a new direction. Here comes Mike Leach, and he goes with the all-air-out offense. Now, when you have a team that a coach that says, look, I have a philosophy of what I want to implement when I get to, I'm going to throw it. I'm going to air it out, much like he did at Washington State, which led to Gardner Minshew's prominence and whatnot. You still have to have the personnel. So you are willing to give a coach a year or two to go recruit the kids that are going to be able to fit that system. You know, speedy wideouts, a guy who can throw, etc. KJ Costello is the man. He threw for over 600 yards. He set an SEC passing record in the game against LSU. Now, I don't care who's come and gone with the LSU football team. They've always been a good defensive team and always have had good corners and good secondary. He torched them. He absolutely torched them. And this might be a wake-up call to teams in the SEC West. I don't know how long Mississippi State can do this now without the element of maybe the initial surprise of having this air raid offense, because Saban and everyone else is going to go to the drawing board and go, look, we're going to figure this out when we play them once they have more film. But it was really nice to see Mike Leach in the SEC get the kind of victory that made everybody in the conference stand up and take notice. Because Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach, the two new guys that have come, the bigger names that have been the new head coaches in the SEC, Lane Kiffin couldn't get it done against Florida, but Mike Leach against LSU was very nice to see. We'll continue with Wake Up Call. Good, the bad, and the dumb next as we roll along on a Monday.
The SportsMap Radio Network, we wear Boomer Naturals masks. Order now at BoomerNaturals.com. Use promo code SportsMapRadio for 20% off. Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser!
Brought to you by Real Ketones Keto Energy Shots. Sustained energy without the sugar, jitters, or crash. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, it's the good, the bad, and the dumb Monday edition as we continue along with Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio. All right, so you had a weekend to digest all the sports goodies. What is the good of the day?
The good of the day, if you know anything about this man's career, you know that this guy always stayed cool and calm under pressure.
Yes.
And that translates into real life sometimes. Joe Montana had to confront and subdue an intruder in his home who was trying to kidnap one of his grandchildren, his infant grandchild.
Yeah, when I first saw this, I thought to myself, that can't be true, is it? And it is true.
I mean, you know what? The best investigative reporting on the planet is probably done by TMZ.
Yeah,
they know everything.
True. They do know everything.
An intruder just walked into her. She just waltzed right into an unlocked door in their home in Malibu. Just went. The only thing that people really don't know is who was holding the child at the time. But she literally just walked right in, grabbed the infant child, and then just tried to walk out the door.
Do we know the motivation?
We don't know the motivation. Or, she was. Joe Montana and his wife, I think it's Jennifer, Jen?
Yeah.
Were able to get the baby back, and cops happened to be close by. So when they did
call. Of course, they live in Malibu. Yeah. I'm sure there's one on every corner.
exactly. Privilege.
That's right.
But they were able to pick her up, and there was just all that was released was she was a 39-year-old woman.
So we don't know anything about her. Like, she had a beef with the Montanas, or she was like maybe on some medication, or she has a sort of disorder. I'm betting there's something not right. Yeah, we don't know the full details. This obviously wasn't like the Lindbergh baby kidnapping where there was this was just someone just randomly walking into a house and taking
a baby. But I can't help.
But there might be a story behind it.
I can't help but think maybe Joe Montana looked around, was like, okay, I need to get her, and just picked up something and threw it with dead accuracy.
Oh, like, yeah, of course, right?
Just whatever. It could have been a vase, and just threw it with dead accuracy and like nailed her in the back or something. I don't know.
I always wonder when I hear stories like this, right? These really incredible tales of, like somebody famous doing something amazing, like, rescuing somebody from a car or, doing like that. Is there ever a moment where their brain goes, this is surreal. This isn't really happening. Like I'm dreaming this
when you are
seeing somebody walk through your home to take your grandchild and right in front of you, your brain can't possibly process that scenario because it doesn't seem realistic.
Yeah, I mean, your first reaction's got to be like, oh, well, who is this?
What is this? Yeah, what is going on?
Must be a friend of my daughter, son, or, neighbor, or I don't know.
I don't know.
It's a bizarre, bizarre story.
It is. It's especially because we always say, well, if that ever happened to me. But, it would be weird at first if it happened to you. Like, you would probably, you would need a few microseconds to process the reality of what is happening. Like, somebody is entering your home and is taking your grandchild away from you. And you have to do something about it. And it's, what a story. Again, I thought it was an Onion story at first. Like, it kind of heard it through, not really officially, but kind of saw it. And I was like, oh, yeah, they're going to say he threw a football at his head or something like that. But then I read it, I was like, no, wait a minute, this really did happen. Crazy.
The thing that crossed my mind is how many times has this happened to somebody else before?
That's true.
We hear about it because it's Joe Montana.
Right.
But if it was Joe Plummer, never would have heard about it.
Yeah, that's true. How often does this occur where people walk into homes
that
and take
alone is scary.
Yeah, exactly. That is scary. Well, if it happened to Montana, be careful out there. Joe Montana. Yeah. All right, what's the bad of the day?
Maybe just don't mess with Joe either.
Yeah, don't mess with Joe either.
We know he's going to remain cool under pressure. But still the most famous my favorite Super Bowl story is, needing a touchdown drive in the Super Bowl. And he's like, hey, is that John Candy?
Yeah, that's still one of my favorite stories because it just meant how cool he was. And I love the fact that the guy who was telling that story, I forget who it was, said, oh, we knew at that moment we were going to win.
Yeah.
He's like, once Joe said that, we were like, oh, we're going to win this game. We're good hands. This guy's not fazed by this at all. But if I'm not mistaken, I believe he met his wife at a commercial shoot for some sort of like shave gel or razor company where she was like the really good looking model that he was in the commercial with, and I think they met that way, if I'm not mistaken. But they've been married forever. All right, what's the bat of the day?
The bat of the day, you have to give that to Cowboys defensive tackle Tristan Hill.
I know. Yeah.
This video, I don't know how you escape this video. Apparently, if you haven't seen it, just Google Tristan Hill. It'll be the first thing that pops up, more than likely. But he's seen tackling Chris Carson, and then while holding on to his lower half of his leg, decides to do a gator roll.
Yep.
And looks like to be twisting Chris Carson's knee. And this is, I don't know, maybe he was like, hey, we haven't had a major injury this week as opposed to last week. Let's just make sure we get a major injury this week. We get one in. Come on, guys. You think so? You got to find this, right?
You got to drop the hammer
on this. Hard.
Yeah, you can't allow this. You can't allow that kind of thing. Yeah, you're right. The video really makes it out to be like it's malicious. And again, circumstances in the game are a little, but this is not a good look.
There was no reason for him to roll.
Not at all.
That's the problem.
Not at all.
I mean, if he had tackled someone and then was rolling, and if it was like in the movement, but he comes to a complete stop once he tackles and then he decides to roll.
Yeah.
This was done on purpose, and this was done with intent to injure. And, yeah, there's I mean, if we're fining coaches $100,000 for not wearing a mask, I can't imagine. I mean, you got to up it on this one.
I think you're right. How close was DK Metcalf going to get your bat if he had not caught the touchdown at the end?
Well, funny that you mention him.
Yeah.
Because we move on to the dumb of the day.
That's right.
And I actually have two. Because, you know, two dumbs always make us feel better on Monday.
Sure.
But that first one is DK Metcalf doing his best Leon Lett impression.
Why? Can I ask? I'm going to ask a legitimate question here. Why is this still happening?
We need
to receivers or anybody. I won't even put it on receivers. Anybody that has a chance to go into the end zone. Why are we still lackadaisically going into the end zone and being loose with the football? I don't care if you are like Leon Lett, a defensive guy, anybody, kick returner, wide receiver, running back, name it. I don't care. If you have the football and you're going through the end zone, why are you not running through the end zone as hard as you possibly can?
Yeah.
Why are we letting up at the 2-yard line? Why are we relaxing before we cross the line? In college, there was a period of time where everybody was dropping the ball on purpose.
Before they crossed the line.
Before they crossed the line, and they never got it. I never got it.
I get it. There was, I don't know who did it this weekend. There was a wide receiver who caught the ball and then walked into the end zone. But there wasn't a man that was 10 yards away from
that was in the Steeler game. I think it was Juju Smith-Schuster who walked in.
But there was no one near him.
Yeah, nobody was
around.
That
I understand.
Well, he was on the sideline, and so he knew no one was behind him. Nobody was on his back because the sideline was on his back. And he's looking around. He doesn't see anybody around him. But if you're going straight down and your eyes are on the back of the end zone and you don't know who's behind you, and there could be somebody 45 degrees to the back of you and the other 45 degrees, you got to hold on to that thing tight. And I never get it. Like, I never get it. I don't know why you would be so lazy crossing the goal line with a football.
Does he make up for it for catching the game-winning touchdown?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
I don't know if that makes up for it.
No, I think if you're – and again, I heard Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson talk to him like in the game and told him. But this is also a Tuesday meeting where you say, okay, it's awesome that you caught this pass and you are 6'5", abs of steel, run like the wind. You're an important receiver. But if you ever do that again, we got some problems with you with your playing time.
You're going practice squad. You
this is not a deficiency in your game. This is not, I have a hard time catching balls on my left side, or I have a hard time. This is you mentally being lazy, and you need to cut that out right now.
Yeah.
That is all it is.
That, I mean, God, imagine if they had lost. They lost that game. And everyone would be pointing like, hey, you could have been, there was an easy touchdown right there.
But you know what's funny is you mentioned Leon Lett. Like, Leon Lett is still brought up, and the Cowboys demolished the Bills in that game.
Yes.
It had no impact on the outcome of the game, but yet Leon Lett is still known for that. You cannot have a defender knock the ball out of your hand when you are a half a step away from a touchdown because you're hanging on to it with, you know, loosely and dangling it from your hand. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, at least he wasn't doing that.
No, he wasn't showboating. He didn't stick it out. Like, you're right. He didn't stick it out and kind of like,
are you not entertained moment?
Right.
You know,
he just was like, I'm running. I got a touchdown, and it just was loose enough to be punched out.
Yeah, that. But I mean, like, you know, 5 yards. What, he's 5-7 yards out. And just decided to. I'm just going to trot in now.
Trot in.
I ran really hard. I beat the guy. I caught the ball over my shoulder. I'm just going to waltz right in.
Like, Pete Carroll should be like, look, dude, the where you stop running is the back end of that end zone. Like,
right.
Run into the wall. I mean, you don't, until you get really across that thing, do not let up. But you're right.
And just real quick, give it up to Trayvon Diggs.
Yeah, good job.
For not giving up.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the same thing we always say with Leon Lett, with Don Beebe.
Right.
We say, hey, don't ever give up on a play. You never know what's going to happen.
You never
that
know.
That could have been the difference in the game.
In a blowout Super Bowl where you are embarrassed because you turned the ball over 9 times, and that's what Buffalo did in that Super Bowl, one guy can emerge as a national figure that he still gets letters to this day about how inspirational that was. You know, when coaches were like, I'm taking this video and showing it to all my players. Like, you can still have that moment even when you're getting annihilated in the Super Bowl. So you had a second bad?
I had a second dumb.
Oh, second down.
And that goes to, I'm not sure who it is, but the Army player and Army coach.
Oh!
The coach who, the player pretty much sent the coach into concussion protocol.
Oh, yeah. I saw a little bit of this on Twitter.
I don't know what the context of the game, because all I saw was this.
They're playing
part.
Cincinnati, I believe, right?
But I don't know if there was a big play. I don't know what happened to cause this kind of celebration. But the lineman was walking off the field. The coach, I don't know if the coach was like, hey, headbutt me, hit me. Or was just trying to give him a hug, but the player decided to lay a vicious headbutt on him.
Yeah.
Helmet to skull. And then all you see is the coach just sitting there like, kind of dazed, you know, taking his towel, removing the headphones. I mean, he's probably like an offensive line coach or, you know, a specific, like, I just handle the tackles on the offensive line type of thing. I mean, it makes me wince every single time I see it.
Yeah, we can do away with that too, yeah. Right?
That's why I'm saying, I mean, I don't know if this is on the coach because he's a football guy.
Yeah, hit me, go. Yeah, exactly.
You know, we've seen that happen before, and we've seen guys, you know, coaches with busted noses because they took the face mask right to the grill. That's what this looked like. This looked like it was a total football guy move.
So there you go. The good, the bad, and the dumb, the Monday edition of Wake Up Call. It's brought to you by Real Ketones Keto Energy Shots, giving you sustained energy without the sugar, jitters, or crash. Keto Energy Shots, 5-star reviews, and you'll know why you take it. It will rev up your metabolism and turn your body into a fat-burning machine in only minutes. Feel energized while shedding unwanted pounds. Real Ketones Keto Energy Shots. We'll continue looking at week 3 of the National Football League and some college as well as we roll along with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we continue along with Wake Up Calls. We continue with the week 3 of the NFL. Superstar batteries exclusively at O'Reilly Auto Parts, designed to meet the electrical demands of today's vehicles. Superstar batteries can get you dependable power and performance from your car, truck, motorcycle, lawnmower, boat, and more. Visit O'Reilly Auto Parts today. Professional parts people can help find just the right battery for you. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, continuing with week 3 of the NFL, but also college this weekend because the SEC started. I mentioned Mike Leach at the beginning. We had a great quote at the end of the game. Did you see that? At the end of the beating LSU, so we played LSU because, like,
yeah.
New England and Green Bay. It's great. Mike Leach is great. He's great for the conference.
I was going to say the same thing. I'm so happy that he's in the SEC.
Yeah. And it was a real surprise because, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, you hire a coach because they might have a philosophy. Every coach who gets interviewed for a job will go, even in college, will go, hey, what is it that you do? Like, what is it that you could bring? And they say, well, I believe in this system and I believe in this and my offense will look like this. And my defense should look like this. And they come, you know, you basically feel out the coach's philosophy, general philosophy. So you give a coach a little bit of time to grow that into a system. You can't expect if I'm taking over a team that is run heavy, right? The coach got fired, but he recruited running backs and big linemen and all that stuff. And I want a light flying everybody. I might have to take a few years to revamp all of the recruits that I need. He comes in and day one, his quarterback throws 323 against LSU. What in the world are they going to do to Vanderbilt?
Yeah.
When they play, like 1,000 yards passing? Again, I mean, come on. I mean, seriously, LSU's defense, I don't get in and out, right? I mean, players come and go, but LSU's defense has always been good.
Well, that's what they're known for. Last year was the anomaly where they're like, oh my God, they have an offense to go with.
They finally have a quarterback that can throw like crazy. That was kind of the anomaly. You're right. But they've always had these in the trenches, good defense, can beat you on the corners, good defensive backs, guys who go to the NFL, defensive back.
Yep.
He torched them. I mean, just annihilated them. And It's like, who knows? Again, I don't know. When Nick Saban gets the tape, who knows? I mean, you know, maybe that gets shut down. I don't know. But my God, was that impressive.
But let me ask you something. Was that a bigger surprise than Kansas State taking down Oklahoma?
See, Kansas State's beaten Oklahoma before.
I know.
Right?
They can't beat anybody else.
I feel like they do this every now and then. Here are the Sooners rolling along, and then they play Kansas State. It used to be Bill Snyder when he was running there. And he would beat them, and then they would lose. And they'd go, no.
Kansas State normally gets, what, 1-2 wins a season?
Yeah,
and every single time?
Well, that's Kansas.
Kansas State's, right.
Yeah, that's Kansas. Kansas State's been a little bit better. But not beat Oklahoma and Norman better.
Right.
Right? I mean, geez. And that poor Spencer Rattler kid, he threw 3 picks. He threw 4 touchdowns and 3 picks.
Yeah, you think he was, they were looking, it's like, hey, is there any way to get Kyrie back?
The interesting thing was Kansas, Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray, not Kyrie Murray.
It was what's interesting was how Kansas State shut Oklahoma out in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
Like they outscored them like 17-0 in the fourth quarter.
It's like they just forgot how to play.
Yeah. Now, Mississippi State, I mean, look, without really diving into exactly what was left in the cupboard after all of those really good players left LSU, I mean.
Or the coordinators.
You know, the coordinators too, right? Because Joe Brady left and whatnot. Dave Aranda went to go become the new coach at Baylor.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And Mike Leach is done. Look, Mike Leach, I mean, he was the guy at Texas Tech, right? He had the air raid offense at Texas Tech. Michael Crabtree played for him, remember? You know, aired it out there. Then you had, he went up to Washington State. Gardner Minshew shined. You know, you'd always see a Washington State quarterback leading the nation or coming close to leading the nation in passing yards. This was not a surprise. It just was a surprise that KJ Costello was like the beneficiary of Mike Leach throwing the ball all over the place. You know, good for him. Good for him. That was really impressive. Fantastic.
So good to have the SEC back.
It was good to have the SEC back. Like my son at the University of Florida, I texted him because that was an early game on Saturday. And I said, what are you doing? And he goes, I'm with a bunch of guys. And he showed a picture and they were all in the common room wearing their masks and whatnot, watching football. And he's just like, this is the best.
Yep.
And Kyle Trask threw 6 touchdowns and the Gators looked fantastic against Lane Kiffin and the Rebels. And, I mean, it was great.
But you wish he could get the experience of, you know, painting his entire body and standing in the stands and then getting a really bad sunburn?
Yeah, you get he told me that there's a lottery system, so he's a freshman, so it's very unlikely he's going to land tickets, which stinks.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a quick story. I remember when I was a freshman in South Carolina, and I would go up to get my tickets, because you had to stand in line to get your tickets. You'd have the pass, and then you'd get your tickets. And I would get, you know, my average student ticket, but my buddies would get good tickets, and they're like, you got to sweeten the women up. They're like, you know, granddaughters of Confederacy or something. Like they volunteered to give the tickets away. And he goes, you got to go up there and go, hey ladies, how y'all doing? You look awfully tired giving away all them tickets. Can I help you? I tell you what, if you can give me something on the 50-yard line, my daddy used to take me down here to these games when I was a little kid. I used to sit the 50-yard line with him. I would really appreciate that. I get you guys a sweet tea or something like that. And they would give away the good tickets to people that just sort of buttered them up. So I tried it. I got pretty good seats. It was serious. It was the only way to do it. Because like I would come up with my northern accent and be like, yeah, can I get a ticket to the game? Where are you from, sweetie? New Hampshire. Yeah, here, behind the band. Like, what? Where am I? Yeah. We're behind the band. What are you talking about?
What's a obstructed view? Don't worry about it.
Exactly. But if I told her I was from Irmo and my family lived in South Carolina for 7 generations, I was sitting 50-yard line in the you know, wherever the students could sit at the 50-yard line.
With a telephone number.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. So I did feel, I told him, I said, I hope you get to go to a game. I mean, really do. I hope you get to go at least once to one of these games.
Oh, he will. He's just starting out.
Don't you get the feeling that they're going to just start opening this up week by week?
You know what? By the time we get to week, I don't even know what. I'm a little confused at how many weeks each of these conferences are playing, by the way.
I know. Me too. Me too.
Yeah, I think some are playing 8, some are playing 10, some are playing 3. I'm not sure. But I think by the midpoint of the season, we can say that. The midpoint of the season, I think, you know, you're all of a sudden it's going to be like, well, there's, you're only allowed 50% in the stadium. You look at it like, that's, I'm no math major, but I think that's more than 50%.
I watched a South Carolina game. It looked like there was a lot of people there in the student section, and nobody was social distancing whatsoever.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
Let's make sure you have your mask on.
Gabe Latz to join us, USA Today, as we go over the Major League Baseball. Postseason starts Tuesday. Who to watch for, who to be careful of. Next, as we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio Network.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, the Major League Baseball season came to an end. The regular season came to an end. Now it's off to the playoffs. They did it. They got, well, as close to 60 in for some teams. Some teams played all 60. Gabe Lax joins us, USA Today, on our Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. How are you, Gabe?
Oh, good, good. Better than I will be in 30 days after, you know, 50-some games or whatever.
Right,
doing all right.
As I was saying, some teams got them all in, some teams didn't, and it was kind of expected. Overall, though, this little over two-month sprint to the finish line, how do you grade it for Major League Baseball? How good of a job did they do getting this in?
Gosh, yeah. I mean, I'd have to give them somewhere around a B, maybe even a B+. I mean, simply because the Marlins and Cardinals showed us how bad it could have been or could be on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, clearly they tightened things up a bit, you know, just got a little more strict with the protocols, maybe just got luckier. I mean, it's, you know, we tend to just like get this mental image of the Marlins and Marlins and Cardinals going out for some crazy wild-eyed night on the town. And it's like, that's not necessarily how this happens, you know? So it's just a matter of, I guess, getting the odds in your favor. And I think they learned a lot from it, from the early days of testing when they weren't getting results back quick enough. They tightened that up. And then, you know, I think the proof is in the final testing numbers where, you know, they obviously, I think there was one positive test in the last month, give or take, or at least, you know, 3 weeks or so. So it's all things considered, I think they did a pretty good job. And, you know, like you said, managed to get almost every game in, albeit with a ton of 7-inning doubleheaders. But,
sure.
You know, they still count the same, and the field was about as level as it could be.
As far as the season, and I know all these different circumstances with the, as you mentioned, 7-inning doubleheaders and then a runner at second base and extra innings, did any of those feel like they could stick in a 162-game schedule, or are they just, for the moment, little things they had to tweak?
Yeah, it's really interesting. The 7-inning doubleheader to me is interesting. I think it could do baseball a lot of good if they scheduled every team for like four of them over the course of a year.
Right. Yeah.
And maybe shaved a few, you know, a few games, a few days off the calendar. You know, because then, you know, you're not messing with the numbers too much. You're still getting a 162 game season. You're just missing a few innings, and over the course of 162, that's a lot less, a hit. You know, I mean, you're talking about a guy like Mike Trout missing, you know, 8 to 10 plate appearances over the course of, you know, 600-700 of them. So no big deal, you know. But it's kind of cool. Like, I didn't go to a ton of games this year just because I don't cover a team full time. I mean, I probably went to, you know, 12 to 15 here in the DC Baltimore area, but I would often choose to go to the 7-inning doubleheaders just because, like, hey, okay, the Rays are in town. I'm going to get to see like 7 or 8 of their pitchers,
right? Right. Yeah.
And most of their platoon, you know. So like, you know, if that was useful for me, I imagine that would be kind of cool for a fan too. Like, hey, you know, let's go to the, and you're not going to be forfeiting 8 hours of your life you know, it's over in what probably what used to take a real 9-inning doubleheader back in the day. Now it takes them to play 2 7-innings, you know, 2.5 hours each. Not too bad, but yeah, to me that's an interesting thing that they could play with and maybe you know make it palatable both for the TV and the stadium audience.
We've seen Tampa Bay in the playoffs before. That's not really surprising. The number one overall team out of the American League, maybe so, but what makes them tick? What makes them good?
Yeah, they're really athletic. I mean, it's very tempting to, you know, to just sort of say, oh, yeah, they platoon everybody to death and, you know, is the sum greater than the, you know, their parts and all that. But you watch them play and, you know, everybody can run. Everybody can catch the ball. You know, they play really good defense pretty much from every spot on the field. And they just kind of keep coming at you. And again, like a lot of these kinds of teams, you know, be it the A's over the years, the Rays, where, you know, they have no superstars, but kind of kill you in the aggregate, so to speak. You know, they are better served over 162. So a 3-game series, a 5-game, a 7-game series, you know, they got to get through 4 of these. And, you know, we'll, you know, I mean, the, you know, let's just take a guy like Hunter Renfroe. You know, he hit 156 over the course of the year, but, you know, he hit 8 home runs, which isn't bad in a 60-game season.
Right.
And surprisingly plays really good defense. Over the course of 60 or 162 games, he's going to bring you something. In a 2-game series, you know, what is Hunter Renfroe going to do for you? He's going to, you know, maybe get one hit, maybe run into one and hit a home run and probably strike out 5 times. So it's kind of it's tricky with teams like the Rays in extremely short samples. But I kind of just feel like 1 to 28, and we do have 28-man rosters, 1 to 28, they just keep coming at you. And they're really fired up after just barely losing to Houston last year. So I think if they can get by Ryu in game 1 and kind of get past the Toronto without incident, you might say, I think that will really get their feet on the ground and make them dangerous and maybe get them going on a little run.
How would you evaluate the Yankees season? It was injuries. There was some problem, but they had power surges and then power outages.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny. Like, you know, everything's always magnified in New York and, you know, obviously even in a 60-game sample that happened, but, yeah, I mean, just two, you know, the injuries really hurt them. And they came out of the gate so strongly and man, when Judge and Stanton are both healthy, it's just breathtaking just to see these guys, you know, hit the ball out of the ballpark and they're so athletic and all the rest of it. And then when they go down suddenly, you know, that depth doesn't look as good as it did. You know, the guys like Mike Tauchman maybe take on a little too much than they should have. A 5-game losing streak, a 7-game losing streak absolutely killed them. Again, the depth of their pitching is questionable, you know, as it always will be. But, you know, I think, you know, you go Cole and Tanaka, you know, and then I think the key guy for the postseason for them might be Garcia. Just, you know, can he be a viable third starter? Can he be kind of that rookie that comes on late in the year and really galvanizes a staff and gives them that key guy to get over the top in a best of 5 or a best of 7? Because, you know, I think obviously Cole was great. And, you know, maybe he wasn't quite as dominant. And, you know, he's such a perfectionist nowadays. You know, maybe wasn't as good as he would have liked. But he's going to be just fine. You know, it's now they got to beat Beaver in game 1. They got to... Yeah, that's going to be a hellacious series, very well pitched series. The Indians are playing really well, but on balance, you know, I think it was an okay year for the Yankees despite all the inherent drama. And you gotta like Clint Frazier putting together the year that he did. You know, a 905 OPS, hit the ball out of the ballpark a lot. Still just 25 years old, and it seems like it's been forever that he's been kind of knocking on the periphery of the door there for the Yankees, but. Yeah, I think you know he's playing with a great level of confidence, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how he's deployed here in October.
These extra playoff teams, is there anybody that obviously wouldn't have gotten in under normal circumstances, but got in under these settings? Do you find like a Toronto, for example, or maybe even a Reds or a Milwaukee? Are there any threatening teams that are coming into this maybe a little hot, but got in and taking the most of their opportunities?
Yeah, I think you have to put Cincinnati in that category. I mean, I think, Yeah, if I'm in Vegas, even if they're playing on the road for three games, I'd have to think they're at worst, even money or a slight favorite, just because of the pitching situation. And it's been kind of the same story for the Braves in the playoffs the last 3 years. You know, you have some real elite offensive players. Maybe you're a little thin on the pitching side, and it's kind of the same story this year. You know, now obviously they can roll out Max Fried, but after that, it gets a little more mysterious. You know, they have a great bullpen. Maybe they can keep down the Reds offense enough, but at the same time, you know, you're suddenly going up against Bauer and Luis Castillo, and now Sonny Gray looking good again. So it's the Reds are very dangerous, and I think they've won 11 of 14. A really bad draw for the Braves, but obviously, I think the Reds' depth of pitching is enough for them to kind of get on a run. Before the season started and before they expanded the playoffs, I had them going to the NLCS, and I'm going to stick with that. Hey, why not? You know,
sure.
Especially because they are, you know, the team we thought they could be kind of coalesced in the last 2 weeks of the season. So, I'd say they're in very good shape, definitely.
Is there a switch for the Astros? No Verlander, kind of an odd year for them, below 500, but a postseason experienced team that now gets a reset button. Are they dangerous, or are they a team that's got some issues?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. They could kind of, I don't know, maybe muddle their way through,
Sure,
I mean, the Twins are probably a really good matchup for them, just because they're not going to, Kenta Maeda has been great, and he's, looks at every bit the part of a number one playoff starter going into the playoffs. But, things are different in the postseason. And, I think the Twins are a little bit like the Rays in that, they're better served over a longer sample. Not to say that, the Bomba squad is anything to be dismissed and that they don't have enough arms. They definitely have enough arms, but it's not exactly the shutdown kind of team. So it kind of reminiscent of the Astros kind of remind me of an NCAA tournament team. Maybe they won the championship last year and they come back and they're a little, a little complacent, whatever, but they kind of muddle through the tournament and you look up and whoa, they're in the final four. You know, how did that happen? I think that could happen with them. I don't expect it to necessarily, but you start with the pitching and you just think, all right, you got Greinke and McCullers, and obviously Valdez has pitched really well, Javier as well. I mean, I don't know if it's enough. I don't know if it's the kind of thing where you go, okay, they're definitely going to be a shutdown kind of team. But the core is back. Springer has come on kind of nicely. He's heading into a walk year. You know, it's an interesting dynamic there. And then a bunch of other guys that this is their last dance, so to speak. You talk about guys like Springer and Reddick, and Correa is coming up pretty quickly. So, I think they could regroup pretty quickly and get on a little run. So I guess long answer short, nothing would surprise me about the Astros if they dipped out quickly or if they just kind of got on this low-key run and then you look up and then everybody goes, oh, my God, I thought we were done with these guys and now they're back.
Gabe Lax, USA Today on baseball as we get ready for the postseason starting on Tuesday. I know that'll be a busy time for you, my friend, but I hope we get you back on to help us when we eliminate some teams and get this thing tighter.
Sounds good. We do have the luxury of time. As
we do.
Got about 32 days left. So. Don't be a stranger.
You got it, Gabe. Talk to you later, my friend. Thanks so much.
Okay,
Gabe,
take care now.
Gabe Lax on a Progressive guest line. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. As we continue along, it is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, it's September, it's going to be October, then November, then December, and you're going to get asked this question, guys. You're going to get asked, what do you want? What do you want for the holidays? What do you want for a present or whatnot? And if you're like me, most of the answers are, I don't know, whatever. But now I got an answer for you. Go to homefields.com. They have fantastic three-dimensional art pieces of your favorite stadiums. Ron's got Dodger Stadium. I just got my Three Rivers Stadium in the mail over the weekend, and it looks fantastic. three-dimensional lighted stadiums. They look great. And also on the back is like a little history, because Ken Smalls, who created these, was also a sports writer. So he writes really nice pieces on the history of the stadiums and things like that. It's a great conversation piece, too. You know, you have it in your house, have it in your home office, or have it at your office at work, whatever. People are going to be asking about it because they look really fantastic. And they're lighted, so you can light them up, and they really add to the three-dimensional effect. Go to homefields.com. You can check out all the stadiums that they have, and you know, you'll find what you're looking for. I'm telling you, they got all sorts. I love 300 of them. They're great. They're great. I loved mine. I got mine.
I was shocked when I saw mine.
Me too.
When I first got, I sat there. I'm like, this. What?
And the cool thing is that even like when you go online, like when you see it online, you go, "That's impressive." But when you get it in your, it's even more impressive.
And you're lighting it up, and you know,
there's an effect to it. Like you look at it, and you're like, "This is neat. This is really cool."
Yeah, I have mine sitting. I put it in. For me, it's in my spare bedroom. Because that's where my family will be coming into town, because I have Dodger Stadium. And I'm like, guys, I got you a Dodger Stadium nightlight.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
Like, just leave that thing on all night long.
College stadiums, new stadiums. But if you're like me and you kind of go, want it old school.
Yeah,
like,
go
I got
school.
Three Rivers. I went old school. Like, Ebbets Field. They have Ebbets Field. I mean, they have.
You want to know how good the quality is? I was FaceTiming my stepfather, who's a diehard Dodger fan, right? And I'm showing it. He goes, "Oh, that's the older style one. That stuff isn't there right now because they changed it all up."
Yeah,
and
right.
He noticed like little things right away, and I'm like, "Oh my god,
that's right."
That makes this thing. That's how easy it is to tell which stadium is which.
A lot to choose from. Again, don't be the person that just goes, "I don't know what I want." Tell them what you want. Homefields.com. Check it out. You will not be disappointed. They are fantastic. All right. Our thanks to Gabe Lax joining us to talk baseball. You know, it's amazing to me the top two seeds are the Dodgers and the Rays. The Rays have been a playoff team.
One makes
but
sense.
They are the number one seed in the American League. 60-game sprint, and the Rays were on top.
Yeah, one
congrats.
Of those two. It reminds me of that Sesame Street song. Three of these things belong together.
Right,
one
right.
Just isn't the same.
That's right. By the way, congratulations to the Blue Jays making the playoffs. They didn't have a home, but they found a home in the postseason. Good for them. Good for
what
you,
crazy
Blue Jays.
Storylines we have at the beginning of this
year. I know, right? Nuts. Jake Asman Show is coming up next. Sports Map Radio. Have a good Monday.